Courts are very reluctant to allow anyone, including researchers, to speak with actual jurors. But Jacqueline Horan, a senior lecturer at the University of Melbourne, and her collaborators have done just that. It took the team 2 years and 14 ethics approval applications, but they did get there. And now they have information no one has ever obtained before.
We interviewed and questioned 294 jurors was initially surveyed, and then we interviewed 115 of those jurors. And they came from 55 trials from Queensland, New South Wales and Victoria. And also as part of the project in those same trials, we interviewed the judges, the experts and the barristers in those same trials. So we got a quadrangulation of views on expert evidence in criminal jury trials.
And what kinds of criminal trials were they?
They were mainly murder and sexual assault trials, which is fairly indicative of the business of the court these days. Half of them involved experts that were DNA experts, and about a third of the experts we caught were medical experts.
What did you discover about the profile of jurors? There's a sense out there in the community that they tend to be the retirees, people with nothing else to do but sit on a jury.
Far from the truth these days. The demographic profile that we took, which is consistent with other research that's been done recently, is that the average jury is adequately representative of the average Australian citizen in terms of gender mix and age. But there is one exception to that, and that's that jurors are better educated than the average Australian citizen. So we've got in our group 69%, two-thirds of the jurors had completed year 12, and 50% of them had gone on to do undergraduate or postgraduate studies.
You were interested in asking jurors about the witnesses who give expert evidence in trials. Why? Why the focus on expert witnesses?
There's been a concern that expert evidence is problematic for jurors to understand, that it's too complicated. And on top of the complications of average people having to undergo and understand the legal system in a jury trial, they also have to understand a scientific area as well. And there's concern that that's just too much for a jury to cope with. We've seen a number of infamous cases that have led us to this concern. In Australia, most recently this year, the Eastman inquiry, where Mr. Barnes, the ballistic expert, was held to be lacking in independence and was biased in the favour of the prosecution. So that's a concern about expert evidence.
That was the trial way back of Mr. Eastman for the killing of a Canberra policeman.
Yes, 19 years ago, and the inquiry was conducted this year.
So coming back to your study, you asked jurors what they thought about expert evidence. What did they tell you?
One of the things that if you ask anybody if they understand something, they will naturally say, of course I do. It's human nature that we don't admit to failings, even if we know about them, and often we don't even realise we don't know about them. So there has been a New Zealand study of jurors in New Zealand which showed that there was a great disparity between what the jurors thought they understood and what they actually understood. We couldn't go and ask the jurors, how much do you understand, and get a real feel for this. We're dealing with perceptions. But we asked some questions that gave us an insight into their understanding of the whole process. And we're finding that they have a fairly nuanced understanding of the role of expert evidence in the court. For example, we asked them how influential were the various aspects of information that they were given during the trial, the prosecution expert evidence. And in response to that questions, they ranked the evidence appropriately in accordance with the burden and the standard of proof, showing us that they do get the importance that the prosecution have to prove their case and that it's not for the defence to disprove. So we had indications like that. The jury, in the dozens of interviews that I conducted, I was just so impressed with their sophisticated understanding of what was going on.
What did the jurors tell you about the use of technical language by the experts? Did they find that off-putting, or did they kind of go, oh, well, they're using big words, that must be good.
We did ask in what way the evidence could be better presented, and lay language was something that they did want. Having observed a couple of dozen of the trials, what I noticed was that the trial judges are very good at picking up when an expert starts using scientific language and asking the expert to explain what that means. It surprised me a bit because in an adversarial system, we're supposed to have a passive judge, and judges these days just aren't passive anymore. And thank goodness they're not, because if the judge hadn't asked those questions and obtained the plain language meaning, then what do you think the jurors would have gone and done?
They might have gone to Google.
Exactly. We've had enough cases where we've found out that jurors are Googling the phrase beyond reasonable doubt, that it's not surprising. The way that they're taught these days in schools, that they instinctively go to the internet if we don't give them what they need in the courtroom. So it's a move away from the traditional adversarial system that we have, that judges are asking questions, but it's an important move away that should be done if we really want the jurors to do their role properly.
Barrister and academic Dr. Jacqueline Horan. Also working on this project is Jane Goodman-Delahunty. She's a professor of psychology and the law at Charles Sturt University. Her focus was on the 18 criminal trials that involved DNA evidence.
Well, there were a number of different kinds of trials, but quite a lot of them were homicide or murder cases. Others were sexual assault. And then I guess there was, you know, more of a motley selection of other kinds of criminal charges, armed robbery, kidnapping, reckless driving, etc.
We've looked at the white coat effect in trials before on this program. There have been some really interesting cases just a few months ago out of the High Court. If people come into court using, technical language, does that give jurors confidence? I mean, the more technical the lingo, does that mean that the jurors give or assume that the expert knows what they're talking about?
If perhaps the jurors simply equate the use of technical language and other credentials of the expert as a badge of expertise, that then they might not process that information in as much depth or strive to understand it because of the apparent complexity, because they simply infer that because the judge has admitted this evidence in the trial, this person is an expert and reliable, so that they focus on the bottom line rather than necessarily understanding all of the details. There are theories that perhaps this happens, and there's some evidence that some of the jurors, in fact, did this. And, you know, we're more impressed by what we call the general impression or the credentials and the presentation. So they talked about how well-spoken some of the experts were, that they left very good impressions and were experienced in giving expert evidence. And that really does go along with this white coat effect, that people are not delving into the details. But Australian jurors are quite well-educated on the whole, and so we did find evidence that they were relying on what we call more central processing and scrutinising the evidence in more depth. And they did go through transcripts, some of them, on a daily basis in some of these difficult cases, looking carefully at everything that the experts had said. And our interviews with some of those jurors indicated that they did understand not only some of the complicated matters about mixed samples and how the DNA profiling is actually conducted, but there are also indications that they did understand some of the limitations that are associated with those random match probabilities when an expert in a DNA case talks about the likelihood of a chance match versus a match from which you can infer more culpability about the source of, or what we call the trace example, and then the accused DNA sample.
But was it a mixed bag? I mean, did those interviews reveal a mixed bag in terms of people's understanding and in terms of people's interaction with expert evidence?
Definitely. We found evidence of both of those kinds of strategies and both of those kinds of abilities. And, you know, not all jurors come to a jury trial with math and science backgrounds and expertise. And so when there are jurors in a panel with that particular background, then even some of those actually tended to use that more peripheral processing, relying on the expertise, perhaps because they thought they know something about science, this person is talking science, their language, and they felt comfortable that they should have confidence.
We're assuming that everybody in a trial wants succinct, clear evidence presented to jurors, but I saw you presenting at a conference, you and Jackie Haran, some of the findings of your new research, and a barrister sort of said, look, actually, you're getting it wrong because lawyers often don't want evidence to be clear and concise. They want to convince maybe prosecutors with a tidal wave of irrefutable evidence, or defence lawyers, they want to sow doubt and muddy the waters. So they don't necessarily have a clear interest in short, concise evidence. They have other agendas and other ways of using expert evidence to promote those agendas.
I don't want to, you know, doubt that that happens in some cases, but I'd say that by and large, in all of the interviews that we did, there was much more concern about making the evidence clear to the jury. And in fact, most of the experts and the lawyers and the judges too were working at ways to enhance the presentation. And so, for example, in one case, there were a number of charts that had been prepared with the experts that were presented to really unpack very thoroughly the DNA processing part and show people examples of how exactly the profiles matched visually. And the jurors appreciated that, you know, and those were vivid examples for them that were helpful. And so I think when we asked the jurors in the case what else could have been done, they thought, well, maybe more PowerPoints would have been useful. So they're always looking for more.
Professor Jane Goodman-Delahunty from Charles Sturt University.